Hey, welcome to the 1505 Club. When it comes to things that we can't live without, be it food, water, or oxygen, the one most rarely discussed is sleep. Did you know that the longest recorded fast was for more than a year? Do you think there's any chance that a person could go more than a year without sleep? The really crazy part is that how we sleep can affect how our body processes oxygen, food, and water. And that's what we're going to talk about today. It's all found in the magic of the circadian rhythm. So let's talk about how we can harness this power to create the ultimate in health and healing. The information that I'm going to be sharing with you today comes from Dr. Sachin Panda. He's a PhD who has studied circadian rhythms his entire career. In spite of all the marvelous discoveries that have happened in the field, the medical community has been slow, if not outright negligent, to include any of this information to better equip their patients for personal health or to inform the science for better research. Frustrated by this situation, he decided to write a book and take it straight to the patient. For my part, my wife found this book at Five Below, bought it and brought it home and said, "Hey, I thought you might like this book." Well, I don't just like the book. I think it's one of the most practical and helpful books I've ever read. You can certainly buy it for yourself, but I'm going to share with you today a practical guide and an understanding that you can begin applying today. It really doesn't get more practical than that. So let's begin with some background info. Then you'll not only understand what works, but why it works. So let's start off with our sensor for our circadian rhythm. I'm sure you're thinking that it's when the light hits our eyes. That's not untrue, but it's a little more complicated than that. Dr. Panda began his career by studying circadian rhythms in flowering plants. They have a circadian rhythm, but they obviously don't have eyes. That would be creepy. So he knew they had to be more to it, but it does still start in the eyes. It starts with a light-sensing protein in the eyes called melanopsin. Melanopsin is the reason why blind people can still sense light and have normal circadian rhythms in spite of their blindness. This is important because our sensitivity to blue light is from a protein in our eyes and not from the optical apparatus itself. If only it was so simple as to begin and end there, but it's not. Over a series of experiments, they discovered that this blue light sensing protein in the eyes only sets our circadian rhythm for our brain. It turns out that each of our organs has its own circadian clock, and it is set based on when we eat our first bite of food. Meaning anything with calories, including coffee with cream and sugar. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. For now, let's just recognize that there are two systems, but let's talk more about the first for a bit before we begin to add in that second one. The most important hours of the night, from a purely circadian rhythm perspective, are the hours of 10 p.m. until 5 a.m. Here's how it works. If you're awake for more than 3 hours during this crucial time, it will derail your circadian rhythm. I don't mean every night, although that certainly would be a huge problem. I mean ever. This often happens when people are traveling, especially to a different time zone. Students are notorious for staying up late or all night to study, but science has demonstrated time and again that getting a full night's sleep will do more to improve your grades than staying up all night will. The crazy part is that if you stay up, you'll have the perception that you're more prepared, just not the reality. The master circadian clock is in the brain. This is the clock that all other clocks report to. This spot in the brain is called the SCN, which stands for suprachiasmic nucleus. It's located in the hypothalamus. This nucleus consists of 20,000 cells responsible for maintaining our internal clock. It's the melanopsin cells in the eyes that report to this nucleus, but it's also the circadian center of every organ that reports their clock based on when we eat. Each of these clocks maintains three important rhythms, and these rhythms are the foundation of all health. These rhythms are sleep, nutrition, and activity. Some people will ask about genetic mutations that could cause problems with these clocks. After extensive research, Dr. Panda reports that they have never found a genetic mutation that will cause problems with the internal clock. But every problem they have ever found was caused by poor decisions and behaviors. This is fantastic news, because it means that no matter how bad you might think your problem is, it's correctable by consistently making some good choices. We'll talk about how to do that specifically in a little bit later. One of the frequent bad choices people make is drinking coffee or anything with caffeine afternoon. Despite popular opinion, caffeine does not give you energy. It simply numbs your brain to the pressure that's created by your sleep debt, so you can continue to function in spite of extreme exhaustion. The catch is that even though you feel alert, you actually are not, and studies have shown that performance goes way down because of the fatigue, but we're unaware of the fatigue because our brain is numb to it. This is why most people experience a severe crash when the caffeine wears off. The sleep debt pressure never went away, but we just became unaware of it. Let me explain just a little bit about the sleep debt and how it works. For every hour that we're awake, we require 20 to 30 minutes of sleep. After 12 hours of being awake, we'll have a 6-hour sleep debt, and that will make us feel tired. After 16 hours of being awake, we'll have a sleep debt that makes it difficult to stay awake without constant, continuous effort to remain awake. The first 4 to 5 hours of sleep every single night are used to pay off the sleep debt. If our sleep debt is greater than what can be paid during this time, we'll have to borrow more time from the critical activities that take place after this. And that's the danger of building up too great of a sleep debt. Caffeine allows you to keep going when your body is demanding that you go to sleep. So this only causes you to kick the can down the road and create a bigger, longer-term problem for the sake of more time, now. A person with a healthy circadian rhythm will never require caffeine to wake up or melatonin to go to sleep. So let's talk about melatonin for just a moment. In contrast to caffeine messing up our circadian rhythm, one of the best ways to reestablish it is by camping. Now that might not be your thing, but let's talk about why it works. With camping, we don't have technology or artificial light, only fire. And this allows our brains to know when it's time to sleep. And that leads to an increase in melatonin production. The reason why people often need to take melatonin to fall asleep at night is because they're unknowingly destroying, or at the very least inhibiting, their own natural melatonin production. How are they doing that? As part of our natural circadian rhythm, we begin producing melatonin about 2 to 3 hours after the last meal of the day. What if you eat dinner at 9 p.m. and then can't figure out why you're still awake at 11 p.m.? But that's not all. I wish it were that simple. What you may not know is that melatonin has an effect on glucose metabolism. After we eat a meal, our glucose and insulin levels rise. They then slowly settle back to resting levels. Melatonin prevents this return to normal, causing blood sugar levels to remain high. What this means, practically, is that if you eat late at night, the presence of melatonin, either natural or supplemental, means that it does not matter what you eat, it will be stored as fat, and you will most certainly gain weight. Circadian dysfunction produces the same symptoms and consequences as a high-fat, high-sugar diet. Can you imagine the consequences of having both? Oh, but wait, there's still more. In the evenings, from roughly the hours of 7 p.m. until midnight, our bodies enter a natural fat-burning cycle. If we eat anything during these hours, we force our bodies out of fat-burning and into food processing. Instead of subtracting calories, we're now adding calories. Combine that with the altered glucose metabolism caused by the presence of melatonin, and you have a recipe for massive weight gain and a potential cause of an epidemic of obesity. So, practical tip number one is to never eat anything after 7 p.m. There was an experiment where a man limited his eating to an 8-hour window. During those 8 hours, he ate anything he wanted, including, by his own confession, 3 pudding cups every day for lunch. He lost 125 pounds just by employing time-restricted eating and only eating between the hours of 7 a.m. and 3 p.m. I should also mention that protein consumption leads to an increase in stomach acid production. For someone who has difficulty sleeping at night due to heartburn or indigestion, they should consume most of their protein in the morning, some at lunch, and then limit the last meal to a low-protein meal, and they'll find that they can sleep much easier. The most important lesson, and the one most people in our society have missed, is that when you eat is far more important than what you eat. So let's take a minute to talk about when we eat. One of the common problems is that we wake up and we start our brain clock, but then we fail to eat and start our body clock, and now our brain is confused by 2 different clocks. When you wake up, you should eat something with protein within 30 minutes of awakening. So here's the thing. Most people who engage in time-restricted eating shorten their eating period by skipping breakfast. It isn't that this won't work, but it doesn't hack into the power of your circadian rhythm. Instead, you're mostly just benefiting from good old-fashioned calorie restriction. If you want to add the power of your circadian rhythm, you should skip dinner instead of breakfast. You should also have your biggest meal with the most amount of protein first. Lunch should be a decent amount of food with a fair amount of protein. Dinner should either be skipped or it should be a light meal. Leftovers from lunch is the right idea. This kind of time-restricted eating can biohack into significant weight loss and a general sense of better health, including much better sleeping. Now, to make this a little more clinical, there was some really interesting research that I think helps to lighten some murky waters, clinically speaking. Quote, stomach cramps, especially the ones you might experience late at night, might stem from electrical activity in your gut gone awry. During the day, electrical activity, just like a muscle twitch in the gut, helps to move muscle through the intestinal tract. Research has shown that there's a circadian rhythm to this process, and it's now thought that people who have stomach cramps and indigestion actually have disrupted electrical activity. Instead of moving the food along in the right direction, if the electrical activity is even slightly altered, it might send the food in the wrong direction, causing pain or cramping. End quote. Now my question is, could this be the underlying mechanism behind SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth? We often wonder, how are people getting fecal bacteria all the way up into their small intestines or even into their stomach? Could the answer be that they're suffering consequences of circadian rhythm disruption? Seems that could very well be the case, or at least part of the answer. But it isn't just our gut function that's affected by circadian rhythm. When it comes to our brain, there are 7 criteria for learning that are affected by circadian rhythm. They are attention, working memory, positive, negative reward assessment, hippocampal memory, alertness, mood, and autonomic function. Let's take a moment to talk about each one of these individually. Attention is the ability to stay focused and complete a task without distraction. If we don't pay attention, then we don't create memories. Attention requires a precise amount of concentration. Too much, and you'll not be able to get off the task. Too little, and you'll not be able to start one. And you certainly will not be able to finish it. According to Dr. Panda, attention has a circadian component. We have an internal drive to be more attentive during the day and are naturally prone to being less attentive at night. However, sleep deprivation messes with our attention. A sleep-deprived brain cannot stay focused on tasks during the day, as the biggest distraction is feeling sleepy and dozing off. Working memory is the most important function of the human brain. It separates us from all other animals. It involves the ability to absorb information, retain it, and connect it to information you've already learned. Sleep deprivation comprises your working memory by affecting your reaction time. This is why most car accidents happen in the morning, and it's the reason why most large-scale accidents like the Exxon Valdez and Chernobyl are related to sleep deprivation. Positive and negative reward assessments are how we use attention and working memory to make decisions. This shows up primarily in the fact that sleep deprivation leads to poor food choices, which usually leads to weight gain. Positive and negative reward assessment also influences how we communicate. When we communicate with anyone, we have a pretty good idea about what will make them happy and what will make them upset. Without good sleep, we are more likely to say something we will regret. Hippocampal memory is part of the limbic system, and it plays a role in the consolidation of information from short-term memory to long-term memory. Hippocampal memory involves calling up information you learned last week and applying it to the task at hand. I think a lot of people don't realize that this is something you can be bad at, and it is correctable. Long-term memory also suffers with sleep deprivation. At first, you may feel like you're more forgetful, but over time, you'll have a harder time storing even new memories, which affects recall necessary for learning and working. The next one is alertness. Our brains are most alert in the morning. As the day goes on, our circadian rhythm instructs our brain to be less alert. This is why some people complain of losing focus at work toward the end of the day. Around 9 to 10 p.m., our alertness drive goes into reverse, and we actively lose the ability to be alert. Our brain switches from active control to a default mode, so it no longer has to listen to our commands. Instead, it goes on autopilot for repair, strengthening its neuronal connections and moving memories from working memory to hippocampal consolidation. Our mood is our state of mind, whether we're feeling happy, energetic, low, irritable, angry, so on. It's normal for happy news to boost our mood and for sad news to make us feel low. However, having less sleep will disrupt our normal response to events and makes us more susceptible to extreme mood swings. Sleep deprivation also tilts your mood toward a more negative state. An animal study done at Johns Hopkins University showed insufficient light triggers depression, like mood, and impairs learning in mice. And this effect was connected to insufficient activation of the blue light sensor, melanopsin. Similarly, a unique collaborative study between neurologists and architects found that office workers with access to daylight had better mood, performance, and sleep quality than those working in windowless offices. Finally, we have autonomic function, the one that holds a special place in the heart of every Gonstead doctor. For those who are less familiar, the nervous system is composed of a central nervous system where all active learning takes place, a peripheral nervous system which connects the brain to organs and muscles to control movement, and an autonomic nervous system which controls everything that happens automatically below the level, or some argue it's above the level, of our consciousness. For optimal health, we need all three to perform at a high level. If the autonomic nervous system is off, you might experience heart palpitations if your heart isn't right, or a stomach ache if your digestion is off. You might even feel stressed out if your stress hormones are off. These conditions are distracting at best and outright dangerous at their worst. At nighttime, autonomic activity subsides, so heart rate, breathing, stomach movement, and even stress hormone production slow down so we can go to sleep. During the day, our autonomic activity is at a peak, and with it, so is our ability to work and learn. Chronic sleep deprivation or an interrupted routine can increase the level of stress hormones produced, causing us to automatically overreact in response to minor stressors. Many of these same hormones, as well as bacteria normally found in the gut, can affect brain function and mood, causing panic attacks or anxiety if the master circadian clock is broken. The simplest solution for this problem is time-restricted eating. Time-restricted eating strengthens the daily rhythms. Now that's a good place for us to stop here for part one. So as promised, let me give you a quick and easy guide that you can apply immediately to start getting yourself or someone else back on track. First thing, set an alarm for 6:30 a.m. With a normal internal clock, you will never need an alarm clock, but to get this started, you probably will. So set an alarm for 6:30 a.m. Now this is the most important part. Get out of bed when your alarm goes off. Eat breakfast, something with protein, before 7 a.m. or within 30 minutes of waking. If you want coffee, this is your one and only chance to drink any. Don't have any caffeine after 9 a.m. Make sure you don't eat any food after 5 p.m. If you want to be aggressive, don't eat any food after 3 p.m. Go to bed at 9 p.m. and you should have no trouble falling asleep before 10 p.m. because you built up a sleep debt from being awake all day and you've reset your clocks with your eating pattern. You should wake up naturally with the sun. Try to go outside and go for a short walk first thing in the morning to stimulate cortisol production. Now, try to make this your new routine. If you want to kick it up a notch and control your light exposure, you can set your phone to go from blue light to orange light in the evening and at night. On an iPhone, it's called Night Shift, and you'll find it in the settings under Display and Brightness. Slide the warmth slider all the way to the right and have it turn on at 7 p.m. and stay on until at least 6 a.m. or whenever the sun comes up where you live. I don't know where you find this feature on other phones, but I know they have it. Most TVs today also have a feature like this, where they slowly transition away from blue light and you'll hardly even notice the change. Also, turn down lights if you watch TV at night and only use one light on a dimmer, and you can effectively watch TV without delaying melatonin production. Blue light exposure is purely a matter of when. It's good for us in the morning and it's bad for us at night. Well, this week we've talked about what circadian rhythm dysfunction looks like and a plan for getting it back on track. In part two, we'll talk about specific applications and how we can use it to specifically maximize the benefit we get from things like studying and exercise. So until then, I hope you have the very best week possible, and I'll see you again next time.